Good afternoon. This is Tuesday, April the 3rd, 2012. It's 3 p.m. We're having a city council work session. In attendance today is Councilman John McLeod, Mayor Kent Gwynn, Councilman Daniel Owen, and Councilwoman Susie Heimbachel. Mrs. Rich will be absent today. She will be joining us later for the council meeting. I was asked to have this work session from the mayor, and I'm going to turn it over to him at this time.
All right, thank you, Madam President. We wanted to have this workshop today to get council up to speed on the Stand Your Ground law and where we are as a police department on it and how we would handle it. And I've got Chief Graham here today to go over that, and I'll turn it over to Chief Graham.
Thank you, Mayor, Council Members. Greg Graham, Chief of Police here in Ocala. I just wanted to take a moment and thank you for your indulgence for us to be able to make this presentation to you. Mainly, this is just education so that you guys are aware of what the law says, what the requirements on law enforcement is, and what the general knowledge is, the basic purpose of this, especially with all the national debate that's going on now on Florida Stand Your Ground law. I just thought it would be important for you guys to hear and understand exactly what the law says, how we have applied it in a couple of cases here in Ocala in the past, and how we would apply it and our investigations in the future. We did have a couple of Stand Your Ground cases in the past. One of them was involved a shooting over at a bowling alley here in town. Detective Matt Boss, who was a detective at the time, he's now Sergeant Matt Boss, was one of the lead investigators in that case, and as a result did a great deal of research in the Stand Your Ground law. And after that case, we actually did in-service training within the organization, and basically what Sergeant Boss is going to present to you today is the exact same training that we went through in the organization as it relates to Stand Your Ground. So it's my pleasure to introduce you to Sergeant Boss.
Mr. Mayor, council members, thank you for having me and allowing me to present this training. Basically, this isn't a talk about the Sanford case. This is that basically was a catalyst that I went to Chief Graham about and made sure that with him coming back that he was up to speed as far as how this law is. We did our in-service training. Every member of the department was able to go through this presentation so that they knew what the requirements were on them as far as these types of investigations. Now, this doesn't change how we actually investigate shooting scenes, homicide scenes. That part is still the same. We still have to determine if a crime was committed. We still have to obtain probable cause to make an arrest. None of that part changes. What changes is some of the verbiage, some of the tactics that we have to employ while we investigate these types of crimes. And unfortunately, within this law, it actually has some consequences if we violate the law on the department and on the officers. So that was one of the big things that we wanted to make sure our officers understood, that there are not consequences if we violate the law ourselves. The bowling alley incident happened, I think, February of last year. And that's when we presented this case to the state attorney's office, that they actually brought this Stand Your Ground law up to us. And we were unaware of this law, and reading it, unfortunately, the police department, being an executive level of government, we can only enforce the law. We don't get to make the law. So even if it's a bad law or we don't agree with the law, we have to go by what the law says. So with this presentation, it actually isn't new. It's been around since 2005, and the Representative Baxley was actually the sponsor of this bill. What had happened was he had heard of a incident in the Panhandle where a homeowner shot an intruder, and the intruder was suing the homeowner. And I can understand that there's issues with that, and that's what sparked Representative Baxley in preparing this law. So it actually took effect October 2005. Basically, there's a lot of statutes in this presentation. I don't want to read them word for word, but I want to, there are certain segments within them that's very important to us. The Stand Your Ground law amended a lot of the wording within the defense or use of force statutes. A lot of times, the police department, we only read statutes where it shows someone did something wrong. Not a lot of times do we read statutes where it actually says someone did something okay or even permissible. So that's why a lot of these statutes are pretty foreign to us, because it actually allows people to do things where, you know, as the police department, we're looking for things that people do bad. So obviously, use of force in defense of a person is justified in using force, except deadly force against another when, and to the extent that the person reasonably believes that such conduct is necessary to defend himself or herself or another against others' imminent use of unlawful force. That hasn't changed. If someone is using force against you, you have a right to defend yourself. That part hasn't changed. However, a person is justified in use of deadly force and does not have a duty to retreat. There's one key phrase that's new: does not have a duty to retreat. If one, he or she reasonably believes that such force is necessary to prevent imminent death or great bodily harm to himself or herself or another, or to prevent the imminent commission of a forcible felony. And we'll get into the definition of a forcible felony, but it's actually expanded a little bit than what we're used to or what we believe a forcible felony is. Another point to bring up is great bodily harm. What is great bodily harm? A broken bone is great bodily harm. So according to statute, and I'm not an attorney, this is just how we see it at the police department. If you get your arm broken, that's great bodily harm. Should that rise to the level of deadly force? And that's something where the prosecutors and attorneys have to sit down and discuss. Home protection. This is something called, people might have heard of the castle doctrine, where your home is your castle. You have the right to defend it. A person is presumed to have a reasonable fear of imminent peril of death or great bodily harm to himself or herself or another when using deadly force that is intended or likely to cause death or great bodily harm to another if the person against whom the defensive force was used was in the process of unlawfully and forcibly entering or had unlawfully and forcibly entered a dwelling, residence, or occupied vehicle, or if that person had removed or was attempting to remove another against that person's will from the dwelling, residence, or occupied vehicle. And the person who uses defensive force knew or had reason to believe that unlawful and forcible entry or unlawful and forcible act was occurring or had occurred. In this next section, there's a word in here that we don't like in law enforcement: presumptions. We like facts. We want to say this happened for this reason. We don't presume anything, because as soon as we start presuming, that's when we're wrong. But unfortunately, this law has a lot of presumptions in there that we have to go by, that there's no if, ands, or buts about it. He's presumed to be in fear. He's presumed to be committing a forcible act. We can't even look at proving that. We have to presume that that is true. The presumption set forth in subsection 1 does not apply if the person against whom defensive force is used has a right to be in or in a lawful residence. So if someone is like the homeowner, or someone is permissible to be in that home, this standard ground cannot be used against them. If the person is a child, if the person is committing an unlawful act themselves by entering the dwelling, so if a burglar or someone who's in a home that's not supposed to be there, they cannot use stand your ground if, say, the homeowner comes in. The person against whom the defensive force uses a law enforcement officer. Did you know that in Indiana a couple weeks ago they actually passed legislature that says it's okay to shoot an officer, a law enforcement officer, if they believe that that law enforcement officer entered that home without cause? How are you going to know if it's cause or not until after the shooting? But that actually just passed Indiana legislature a couple weeks ago. So luckily, the only probably good thing as a law enforcement officer myself in this statute is this section here where standing your ground cannot be used against a law enforcement officer. A person who is not engaged in an unlawful activity and who is attacked in any other place where he or she has a right to be has no duty to retreat and has the right to stand his or her ground and meet force with force, including deadly force, if he or she reasonably believes it is necessary to do so to prevent death or great bodily harm to himself or herself or another, or to prevent the commission of a forcible felony. This is where the castle doctrine now is outside in public. It's outside on the downtown square, walking down the street in a parking lot. So now you have these same rights outside. The only difference is there's no presumption. You're not presumed to be in fear outside. you're presumed to be in fear inside your home, inside your car, inside a dwelling. But outside in the public eye, that's where you don't have that presumption of fear, and that's where we still have to prove whether you were in fear or not. A person who unlawfully and by force enters or attempts to enter a person's dwelling, residence, or occupied vehicle is presumed to be doing so with the intent to commit an unlawful act involving force or violence. This is another addition here. You're presumed, if you are breaking into a house, you are presumed to be committing an unlawful act involving force or violence. Even if you were just going in there to steal a television, there's no force, there's no violence there, but you are presumed to be doing so. So regardless of what your intent is, when a burglar enters a home, regardless of what his intent, what is his intent to steal, if his intent is to cut copper out of the walls or out of the piping, he is presumed to be doing it with violence or force. And this just goes into the definitions of dwellings. It goes into the fact that dwellings are mobile or immobile. They can be tents, they can be mobile homes, they can be, you know, if you're at a campground, it could be anywhere where you've laid your head and are basically using that as a residence. Definition of residences and vehicles. The other thing it allows, the statute allows, is the use of force in defense of others. A person is justified in the use of force except deadly force against another when and to the extent that the person reasonably believes that such conduct is necessary to prevent or terminate the other's trespass on or other tortious or criminal interferences with either real property other than a dwelling or personal property lawfully in his or her possession or in the possession of another who is a member of his or her immediate family, and he or she has a legal duty to protect. However, the person is justified in the use of deadly force only if he or she reasonably believes that such force is necessary to prevent the imminent commission of a forcible felony. A person does not have a duty to retreat if the person is in a place where he or she has a right to be. So again, now I can come, or if I was just an average citizen, I could come to the defense of another person's property. I can come to the defense against another person if their purse was stolen. Now, we all think of Good Samaritans, but how far does that Good Samaritan go? Does a Good Samaritan actually pull out a gun and try to use deadly force if a forcible felony is being used? Now, here's where the statute expands the definition of a forcible felony. It means treason, murder, manslaughter, sexual battery, carjacking, home invasion, robbery, burglary. That's one where we normally don't think is an actual forcible felony. Arson, kidnapping, aggravated assault, aggravated battery, aggravated stalking, aircraft piracy, unlawful throwing, placing, discharging of a destructive device or bomb, and any other felony which involves the use of threat or threat of physical force or violence against an individual. So that kind of expands it a great deal. The beginning of the presentation actually had a link to a 911 call. It was out in California where a homeowner called 911 saying his neighbor's home was being burglarized. And he could see the people going in the window, could see him bringing televisions out, and the dispatcher's telling him, there's officers on the way, there's officers on the way. Well, the homeowner takes his gun out and shoots them as they're stealing televisions. Now, under our Florida standard ground law, he would be immune from prosecution because the burglary is a forcible felony now under the statute, and he is defending someone else's property when they didn't have a right to be there. An act is committed in the course of committing it if it occurs in an attempt to commit the offense or in flight after the attempt or commission. This is also a scary section because on that 911 call, he shoots one of the burglars in the yard next door. The other burglar he shoots while he's running down the street. Unfortunately, according to statute, in flight after the attempt or commission. It's the whole fleeing felon rule all over again, which, you know, there was a U.S. Supreme Court decision, Tennessee versus Gardner, that says we can't do that unless we feel that that person is an imminent threat to wherever he's running towards. But this statute hopefully doesn't trump, you know, U.S. Supreme Court decision. This is where consequences come into play. Immunity from criminal prosecution and civil action for justifiable use of force. The The person who uses force under those statutes is justified using such force and is immune from criminal prosecution. The difference between immunity and defense is immunity, there is no arrest. There is no arraignment. There is no, you have to get on the stand and give your defense and let a jury buy it. Immunity is you're not charged at all. And that's something where, you know, who makes that determination? And it's more than likely, as we have seen, a very controversial determination. Again, law enforcement, you are not immune for using force against law enforcement who are acting in their official duties. Where the police come in line here is the last three lines. As used in this subsection, the term criminal prosecution includes arresting, detaining in custody, and charging or prosecuting the defendant. Now, this is where, at the police department, we've had to talk to our investigators in a great deal about this, because normally when we think of prosecution, we don't think of the arrest side as being prosecution. We don't think of detaining somebody during an investigation as part of the prosecution. But unfortunately, if there is an inclination that this might be staying around, that person has to be known that they are free to leave. This is what we have instructed our detectives and our officers. Once we have made a determination that this is a possible standing ground case, whoever the subject is of the investigation has to be told that they are free to leave, and we have to find other ways to prove the case and to investigate the case. Because detaining somebody at the police department, detaining somebody on the scene, you know, getting to the scene and seeing, you know, a person who shot and a suspect there with a smoking gun, yes, we can detain that person, we can secure the weapon, we can make sure that it is legit, and as soon as we find out that it's standing your ground, though, the handcuffs have to come off. The person has to be told that he's free to leave. Now, if there's other witnesses that come forward and say, no, this is really what happened, the smoking gun guy came at the victim, then we change our investigation. But if we start realizing that it's standing ground, that person has to be told that they're free to go, because there's consequences. A law enforcement agency may use standard procedures for investigating the use of force, as described in subsection 1, but the agency may not arrest the person for using force unless it determines that there's probable cause that the force that was used was unlawful. The court shall award reasonable attorney fees, court costs, compensation for loss of income, and all expenses incurred by the defendant in defense of any civil action brought by a plaintiff if the court finds that the defendant is immune from prosecution. So that's where we have consequences. Now, I've done a lot of research on the standing ground, and I haven't seen where this has come back at a department or at a city or a county for someone who has been detained in a situation like this, but it doesn't mean it's not gonna happen. So one of the things that we wanna do is just make sure everybody's on the same page as what this law says. And that, unfortunately, there is not a lot of case law on this standard ground, so it is pretty much black and white. I mean, that's what it says in statute, is that we may have to award reasonable monetary compensation if we detain somebody and it was a standard ground case. Use of force by an aggressor. The justification described in the preceding section of this chapter is not available to a person who is attempting to commit, committing, or escaping after the commission of a forcible felony, or initially provokes the use of force against himself or herself, unless such force is so great that the person reasonably believes that he or she is in imminent danger or death of great bodily harm, and that he or she has exhausted every reasonable means to escape such danger other than the use of force, which is likely to cause death or great bodily harm to the assailant. Or in good faith, the person withdraws from physical contact with the assailant and indicates clearly to the assailant that he or she desires to withdraw and terminate the use of force, but the assailant continues or resumes the use of force. So use of force by an aggressor, that's where our crime scene is going to show us who the aggressor is. Are there tables knocked over? Is there glass broken? We have to do more as an investigative agency, more than just interviewing people. We have to look at our scenes and let them paint a picture and make sure that what we're hearing from people actually matches up to our crime scenes. There's four key points that I found that where there's this this area where we don't know. It's not black or white. Unlawful activity. In Newport Richey, a prostitute was in the home of one of her Johns, and the John told the prostitute he was going to kill her. Well, the John went and to answer a phone and left his gun sitting on the counter. When he returned, she picked up the gun and shot him. Now, there's obviously a debate there as whether she was in fear for her life. He had obviously produced a gun, but he had already left the gun. He left the weapon that could be used to kill her, and all she had to do was run out the house. But again, there's no duty to retreat. So instead of leaving the house and getting away from the threat, she stood her ground. And even though she was engaged in unlawful activity, even though she admitted that she was there as a prostitute, even though she admitted that this John was paying her, she still was held underneath the standard ground. So even if you are in some type of breaking the law, you can still use standard ground. Irrebuttable presumptions. And this is where it gets into the burglary part. These two neighbors are in a dispute over homeowner or trash and their local ordinances. The one neighbor comes next door and confronts the other neighbor, and they got into an argument. Well, the neighbor tried to shut his door, and the guy put his foot in the door so he couldn't shut the door all the way. That is a burglary. He entered the plane of the door. He entered a burglary. He doesn't have to show proof that the guy was going to commit a crime within. He is presumed to be using force or violence, and the homeowner shocked for sticking his foot in the door and not allowing him to shut the door. Unfortunately, the prosecutors, there's no hearing, there's no court process, there's none of that, because the guy is immune. So it doesn't even get to that stage where the state attorney's office can go to a judge and say, but, you know, do the circumstances dictate this man being shot and killed just by putting his foot in the door? It never gets to that point. And that's where the attorneys, the prosecutors, that's their issue there. The research also shows that the Florida State Attorney's Office, Florida State Attorneys Association, did not like this bill when it was introduced. And they actually asked for it not to be, but their voice wasn't heard, I guess, loud enough. Failure to state the amount of force that can be used. Two kids are getting into a confrontation. One has a small little wooden baseball bat. The other subject pulls a knife out. A third party sees the bat, doesn't see the knife, and shoots and kills the guy with the bat, thinking that he's going to hit the kid over the head with it. Based on where the guy was and the information that he had and his perceptions of that incident, allowed him to use stand your ground. And this is probably the worst of it all. Immunity from all criminal prosecution and civil suits. If the mayor and I wanted to go to the downtown square and have a duel, and he's a better shot than me and gets me, and I'm not as good a shot and I hit everybody else, because we were engaged in a duel, I'm immune from everybody's prosecution and everybody's civil suit. This was a little girl, 9 years old, who was shot by a stray bullet because two guys were engaged in a shootout. Because they were engaged in a shootout, they were under standard ground. Standard ground also applies to innocent bystanders. Immunity from civil prosecution, civil suits from innocent bystanders as well. Unfortunately, we didn't make the law, we only have to enforce the law. So how does this law affect OPD? Are patrol officers in their preliminary investigations, are they really the suspect or are they a subject? How and when we detain people involved in the investigations, as far as our investigators, the follow-up information, immediate contact with the state attorney's office and getting their legal opinion on it, our collection of evidence. There's tons of case law on actual collection of evidence, and if the person is a victim or if the person is a suspect, there are different requirements that we might, legal requirements we may have. Our victims' advocates are, you know, is our victim really falls under crimes compensation, where they're allowed money from the state? Well, if they're not classified as a victim because it's standard ground, they're not eligible. And the biggest thing is education. When the chief and I spoke about this, we wanted to educate our leaders, we wanted to educate our community about this law and explain why the police department might do or why our steps of our investigation might go a certain way. It's not that we don't want to, you know, find closure. It's not that we don't feel ourselves for the victims of these types of cases. Unfortunately, we are held, obviously, to these statutes, and we can be liable for improper use of the law as well. If we prematurely make an arrest, and the person that we arrest does not waive speedy trial, the prosecutor has 21 days to take that case to court, to take that case to trial. If we're waiting on DNA evidence, that could take 6 to 9 months. So that guy's going to have to get off the charge, and because he's been arraigned, double jeopardy applies, and he will never be heard, never be tried on that case. So it's very important. That's why we're not rushing to make arrest. Although our burden of proof is only probable cause, the prosecutor's burden of proof is that proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And we are trying to now, when we make the arrest on these homicide cases and these major shooting cases, that we also are striving for that proof beyond a reasonable doubt so that we know that there's no chance of that person getting off these charges and that double jeopardy doesn't apply. The Chief Assistant State Attorney in the 4th Judicial Circuit had this quote, "Unfortunately, you can't write a law that says only good citizens can use deadly force to protect themselves. If a bad guy is defending himself against another bad guy, the law applies to him too." And that, in a nutshell, is standing ground. This law applies to everybody, regardless of who they are, if they're good, bad, or indifferent. Us as an agency and us as a city has to just understand what the law is and what it allows us to do. And if we're not doing something, there's a reason why. And we're not doing it just because we don't believe somebody, but that there are procedural reasons, there's statutory reasons on why we're not doing things, certain things that people may think we should be doing. Any questions?
Any questions or comments from council?
No. Sir. Thank you, Matt. And I just wanted to clarify, I'm not seeking any answer or vote or any direction at all by the council. This was just an opportunity for us, based on the national debate, to fully inform the council as it relates to what that law says, what how we understand it, how we apply it, and if a situation was to happen here again, like it has already happened, what our steps would be in properly investigating that case, working with the state attorney's office, working with the families of the, however you want to call them, victims, defendants, shooters, non-shooters, assailants, non-assailants, that we take our jobs extremely seriously and that we try to make sure that we do everything we can to make sure that justice is served. And we understand how important it is, and we also understand that in most cases, we only get one shot or one, no pun intended, or one bite of the apple. So we want to make sure we've got all our ducks in a row and we've done everything we can before we bring a case forward one way or the other. So thank you for your indulgence.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chief.
Did you have anything else? I have a few.
Gathering and listening to that, I appreciate it.
You're welcome. I have a few public comments. Just would, as I call people up, they've filled out their slips. Remind you that we have a council meeting scheduled in about 10 minutes, so if we could make our comments as succinct as possible, it would be appreciated. Thelma Pine.
Hi.
Hi.
I.
Could you please state your name and address for the record, please?
My name is Thelma Pine. My address is 8350 Northwest 215th Street in Micanopy. Basically, I heard about this last night, and I wasn't totally sure of all that was going to happen. I can certainly see the flaws that he mentioned in the Stand Your Ground law, mm-hmm. And that there are some, areas that could be questionable. But for me, to be able to defend myself, should I need to, that's very important. I am a disabled person, and consequently, that would, you know, to have that taken away from me, or to not be able to stand, because for many years, I can remember where in Florida, it was only if you were inside your house, only if you were inside your home. I was born and raised in Florida. And I can remember the laughter and the jokes and everything of, well, if somebody comes to your house and tries to break in and you have to shoot him, be sure he falls inside the door. You know, don't let him fall outside the door. When this law was passed, I can remember feeling, and at the time that it was passed, shortly thereafter, believe it or not, we started having trouble with a neighbor. And now, just a moment. The neighbor actually came onto our property and assaulted my husband. Not here in Marion County, but assaulted my husband. And we got in trouble because he shoved her down. And that's all he did was shove her down. But the thing is with this law, and I understand the use of force, and I know you're not taking any action, but should you at any time be asked to take any action or to bring forth a resolution to support major changes to this law that might take the teeth out of it?
Ma'am, this
please
is a
don't.
State law.
I so know it's a state law, yeah. But that's why I said, should you be asked to support a resolution? Okay. Only a resolution, because I know you can't take action on the law. I would even consider not doing that. And that's, I guess that's where I would be, because with even with all of everything that's going on now in the country, you know, I couldn't see it.
I thank you very much.
Thank you.
Beverly LaCrosse. Please state your name and address for the record.
Yes, my name is Beverly LaCrosse, and I live 3951 Northeast 22nd Avenue in Ocala. Mm-hmm. And I just want to say I have been an avid hunter in the state of New York. I've had my licenses there as well as a concealed license here in the state of Florida. And what drove me to really, I was jumped by three men, let's put it that way. And it'll never happen again. Never. And we need this law. We've got to keep it intact. We really do. Okay. Maybe arranged a little differently, but and it says that's our Second Amendment right too, to bear arms. And we got to keep it. Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Eugene LaCrosse.
Gene LaCrosse, 3951 Northeast 22nd Avenue, Ocala, Florida. I'm there.
Yeah, you'll have to excuse us. We're getting ready for our 4 o'clock, and that's about 5 minutes. So, again, just please keep it succinct.
3951 Northeast 22nd Avenue, Ocala, Florida. Eugene LaCrosse. I've been in the military, and I understand this law is pretty neat. Some cautions on some of the equipment. Or the weapons, a lot of them are single action, some are dual action. And I feel what's going on now that there's a big hype to change, get us away from the Second Amendment, because look at what's going on here in Florida with the poor kid that got shot. It's coming out now that he wasn't entirely innocent. But anyways, the lady in Arizona, Kathy Gifford, the congresswoman that got killed, deranged person. So I just think this law is pretty good, pretty reasonable. And the instructors that I've talked to, they explain it very, very well, and shows you your course of action you can with this single action and double action. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Al Garfield.
Hi, I'm Al Garfield. I'm from Reddick, 9675, 12172 Place, Reddick. The way I feel about this, you're not going to get a law, one size fits all kind of law that's going to be perfect. But there's a law that God's law, natural law, says all creatures are allowed to protect themselves and their families. And if I choose to take this law and use it in an unjust way, and I, God forbid, kill somebody, and I do it wrongly, and I hide behind this law, I may escape prosecution by that, but I'm not going to escape the God of the universe. There's going to be judgment, and final judgment will fall on me for that. I believe that it's a good law, that no law is perfect, but don't let the pendulum swing the other way, and let only criminals rule our streets. Okay, thank you.
Bernie DeCastro. Please state your name and address.
Bernie DeCastro, 50 Northeast 35th Street, Ocala, Florida. Thank you, Councilman and Councilwomen. And I'd like to say that, you know, I feel very, like all of us do, very badly about what happened to this young man, and our hearts go out to the family. But I also know that all of us know that this scenario is being played out on the national stage. And we're bringing in players like Sharpton and Jackson to make something bigger than it is. And we don't even have the facts yet. There's a rush to judgment, and now we're having city council meetings and trying to find out, you know, what we should do to eviscerate the Second Amendment. We've already eviscerated the Fourth, Fifth, Sixth, and just recently the First Amendment. And if the Second Amendment goes, America goes. So I was listening to Sergeant Boss's presentation, and I didn't hear one thing, one positive thing about this law. I didn't hear him mention one person whose life was saved because of this law. So I think it was a very unbalanced presentation.
Thank you. Dr. Robert Dreyfus.
Robert Dreyfus, 7 Sequoia Loop Drive, Oklawaha. I'm a staunch advocate for the unalienable right which we have to protect ourselves and to carry our weapon. There's been an unremitting effort over the last 50 years to dilute our rights under the Second Amendment. But every objective study shows that guns in the hands of honest citizens reduce violence by serving as a deterrent. Gary Kleck, who is a professor, a criminologist at Florida State University, did a study in 1983. He found that 2.5 million crimes were thwarted each year by citizens owning guns. I would encourage you to pass a resolution reaffirming the right for citizens to own guns, as they did in Kennesaw, Georgia. Kennesaw, Georgia passed a resolution in March of 1982, mandating, although they never prosecuted anyone, but mandating that citizens own a weapon and be trained in its use. That was the only area in the surrounding area that had a significant diminishment in the amount of crime. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any other public comments at this time? Are there any other comments from council? Oh, come forward, please. Please state your name and address for the record.
My name is Steve Hunter. I live at 3790 Northeast 138th Place. Does the police department looked into what were the violent crime rates before this law was passed, and what are they now? Have they gone up or down? From everything I've read, they've gone down significantly. Okay. Our churches ought to be doing a lot more teaching to their people about what goes on in government and teaching a lot more of the Ten Commandments. They might not have so much need for this if they do what they're supposed to be doing. And I can understand why the 535 members of Congress and the entire executive branch would be worried about this law, since this law specifically calls out treason as a reason that you can use it. So I would be worried about it if I was up there too. And from this presentation, I gather that the Ocala Police Department isn't very supportive of this law. And what should we expect? Should any of us ever have to use this deadly force to defend ourselves from the Ocala Police Department? Are we going to be treated like criminals, or are we going to be treated fairly? Why was this presentation put on now? Was this something that was requested outside of the city?
You want an answer?
Yeah, I'd like an answer.
Okay. It was discussed by both Chief Graham and I after a crime stat meeting. He said, you know, given everything that's been going on, we just want to present to council what our viewpoint is and how we would address the Stand Your Ground law.
Okay.
Nothing more, just an educational item for council.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Nothing more, nothing less.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. State your name and address for the record, please.
My name is Loretta Pompey Jenkins, 2200 Northwest 24th Road, Ocala, Florida, 34475. And I stand just to make a comment about this law that has gained so much notoriety. I am a staunch supporter of the Constitution of the United States and all that it stands for. But sometimes our lawmakers get a little bit overzealous in their duties, I guess, as a lawmaker. And sometimes some of the laws they make are not good for all of the citizens. I think that this law has too much ambiguity in it for it to continue to be law. Don't know the route that I need to take, but I am going to research and find the route that I need to take so I can get something repealed as it pertains to this law. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else? Okay. Mrs. Rich, did you have any comments or questions?
No.
All right. We are adjourned, and we will be back in just a couple minutes for the council meeting.
This is a state law.
Yes.
Why don't they go to town?
Hey, Kim McGurn. How are you?
Yeah, that's going to run.
Good.
Can we
about to start a council.